3.5 pages that you sent me by that woman who said she was in a relationship with a guy who said he was involved in the Roden murders, I'm not surprised that people in law enforcement don't believe her, but not because I don't believe she isn't telling the truth. People in law enforcement frequently ignore information about crimes that have been committed by people or criminal activity that is currently happening, and judges sometimes ignore serious situations. They won't issue a restraining orders and stuff like that. That's just an unfortunate reality that we're dealing with in life. But I know from personal experience that people in law enforcement ignore information about crimes, because I've been ignored regarding information I have about crimes that have happened, you know, some of which are murders and others are just serious felonies. But I commend that woman for contacting law enforcement and giving them that information. However, I find it both disturbing and appalling that they didn't properly pursue that information, or just kind of being nonchalant about it, you know, like it doesn't matter.
Hello, welcome to Killer Crawlspace, episode 48. You just listened to my buddy Tim talk about the, if you remember, I know it was posted in the groups, but I sent him the printout of it. It's the lady that said that her boyfriend or something that turned out it was just her basically being upset with him and all that and trying to get back at him. But yeah, I sent that to him, and that was his opinion on it, and you'll hear about him, Tim, more in a later episode. But this episode is going to be some questions that was sent in that I ask around in the groups and stuff, and this is kind of my theory, and I had a lady help me with some of her theories and stuff and thoughts on it. So I'm going to go ahead and start this out with how did the killers gain entry into all the homes? You know, from statements that I have seen, Chris Sr. was believed to be awake when the killers showed up at the one house, which was the one he was in. Said he did have defensive wounds on his right forearm, and this makes me wonder, was he already expecting visitors that night? Because it's been stated a lot that whoever done these murders knew the area real well. And there's also been stated that possibly the killers were let into the homes because they knew them, and the killers had keys to the homes, or they got keys from whoever they killed first. Very possibility. And they let someone in they trusted, went back to the bed, and that person let someone in. Very possible. Someone gained access to Dana Roden when she came home late and went in on her at the same time she went to her door. Very possible. Someone unlocked windows at some point in the home shortly before the murders. Another very interesting take on that. Okay, the second question is, has there ever been a case where so many people claim to know what happened or write awesomely bizarre poems with supposed inside details? I discussed the poems in my last episode, and it seems everyone is iffy on them. And is there something there? You know, very possible. Or is it just some creep wanting to write a poem with the information already out there that was in the media? You know, like I said, it's 50-50 on it. Some people think there might be something there. Like I said, I could see it, because like I said, poetry is very personal. And I guess this actually happened before. It's the lady sent me an article that said the nurse who murdered patients wrote eerie poems online. And this was in 10/26/2016. So I'm sure there's more, because you got like Dennis Rader, the BTK killer. You know, he wrote poems and stuff after the fact, talking about some of his crimes. So it's very, very possible. Number three, what home would have been the first one entered? What it seems like, it does seem like Chris Sr.'s home was entered first, or was it? You know, I kind of wonder if there was a shooter at each home and waited for a signal possibly to take charge inside the other homes. You know, that's just my thought. She was talking about she believed Chris Sr. was the first one, well, first home entered, and maybe Chris Sr. was not supposed to be home and a robbery was to take place and things went south. Maybe someone visiting him killed him and family knew who was there that day or night. And maybe Gary Roden was in on a robbery but not murders and was double-crossed. When he came in, he was killed. You know, those are all very possible theories. Number four was, how were the dogs avoided, and how, and all the chaos, were the kids left unharmed? You know, it's got to be somebody that was well known to the family and knew the area. And it kind of surprised me none of the kids were harmed with the shootings. But execution style, and they were sleeping besides, you know, Chris Senior, then all the shots would have been, you know, pretty much point blank. It seems like, you know, close to the body, so maybe that's why the kids weren't shot, you know, where they were more up on the people. Excuse me. But you can kind of think, though, too, maybe like a stray bullet or something. It's a very possibility. Some other theories that she mentioned, that the dogs did not pose a problem, they would have been shot, and for whatever reason, they did not. Maybe Chris Sr. let someone in and let the dogs out. Maybe he called the dogs when someone came. Very possibility. See, the fifth question that was sent in were the babies moved out of the bedroom when the murders took place? I personally don't think they were. Like I said earlier, you know, most of this was pretty much would have been point blank, you know, right up there on the victim. And that's the same thing that she believed too, is if you shoot someone execution style, you won't hit the babies, and is her thought. So very possibility. Number six, this question I found pretty interesting too. I've read a little bit on him, but I know his body was just found. But was Billy Harper fed to the hogs? And there's talk of that being Molly Tibbetts' fate. Different case, but maybe a link. I personally wouldn't think it'd be linked, and I haven't looked into Molly's case, though. She said, you know, about his bones being found, and there's a Facebook page dedicated to him, so I'm not sure he was fed to the hogs, and she did not know that about Molly. So, like, so I'll look into that and see if maybe there is a link. Oh, not, yeah, linked to the case. Number seven, how many knew in advance but didn't say anything and continues to keep quiet about it? I'd say there's some people who knew, most likely a really best friend or a relative to the killer, you know, killers. And the killers might have just, you know, kept the information to, you're going to hear me shuffling pages here. The killers might, like I said, might have kept information himself, which in turn could be why they haven't been caught yet, or they just know people, like I said, that they can trust really well. Which, you know, rumors fly, and if, you know, you'd think a guilty conscience would eventually speak up at some point. And she said she didn't really have any idea on that, and it could be multiple people who knew, or it could just be one killer. Like, it literally could be one killer, which is kind of hard to fathom with everything that's going on. Excuse me again. Number eight, why were the babies not transported by the ambulance to the hospital immediately that morning? I'm not sure on this. I know people have made comments about, you know, the gunshots would have been probably loud and probably would have affected the babies and stuff. But she said she thinks they were transported, but not immediately after. So, you know, it could have been, you know, a little bit time. Number nine, why are things being covered up? I kind of wonder, like, what if it's not being covered up? You know, cover-up theories are always brought up in unsolved crimes. And I'm not saying it's not being covered up, but you got to keep in mind, well, an open mind in case it's not being covered up. Like I said, you find this a lot with anything, like any murders, you know, people disappear, anything, you know, there's always that possibility that it's a cover-up, big police cover-up. Like I said, it might not always be the case. She said that she guessed that Ellie accused people of covering up things. Maybe if they're not covering up murder, but covering up things they were involved with the rodents in, afraid to say they were involved in the stuff. Also, maybe someone is involved in covering up. You know, like I said, interesting theories. The ultimate reason why, who knew and who benefited. There are many reasons, whether it be the drugs, you know, the marijuana, which some people talk about the chicken fighting, which I don't see that really being an issue. Excuse me. The child custody issues. Money, jealousy. You know, we have no clue since somebody's been caught. You know, we can only assume who benefited and the reasons why. What was the motive behind it? And like I said, the killers or killers knew. You know, they know that they done it. Sadly, the Roden family know who killed them. They're just, you know, sadly can't say who killed them. And who else knows? You know, I'm sure others know. But like I said, we don't know who benefited from this since we don't know who done it, but it falls back on the reason why. We can speculate, but nothing is concrete. She says that that is a question I see a lot, and I don't think it can be answered. I think because we don't know all the things that the R's were involved with, meaning the rodents, and the people they were involved with, we don't know who could have benefited. The glaring one is the would be the Wagners over custody, because we know Ellie is focused on them. That old saying, you don't know what you don't know. Which, like I said, you don't know what you don't know. So it's very hard to speculate who done it. You know, you can say, well, it was these people. But it seems like a lot of stories and stuff I've seen and theories and thoughts on this, there's always, like, holes tied up. Like, there's always a hole in the story somewhere. Like, nothing perfectly adds up. So, and if this question, basically, who done it? Like I said, everyone has suspects, but what if it's not them? What if it's not the suspect you think it is? What if this has nothing to do with anybody in the picture? Like, I don't see it being that, but what if the killers had no connection? But maybe, you know, maybe we're dealing with, like, a serial killer, which, in this sense, since he killed, you know, these people, the Roden family, all in one night, you know, maybe, like, the BTK, you know, he stalked his victim stuff. Like I said, he did murder, you know, a family of four and stuff like that. But she said the Wagner and the Roden, and says M, which I'm assuming Manly, business associate, locals robbed them, molestation victim, professional hired by someone. Very, you know, very possibility. See, number 12, was it revenge? It's very possible could be revenge, and it falls back onto the reasons why, you know, with all that. It could be, you know, somebody snitched on somebody, somebody done something, you know. And she said, I think revenge for something could be a very good motive. Revenge for what we don't know. Maybe he schemed money. Maybe it's custody. Maybe it had something to do with the child. Maybe the Rodens didn't pay some associates that was in the business with them. All very possible if it falls back on the director aid, which I kind of see, you know, well, the whole marijuana thing. I could kind of see that being an issue. Sorry if you just heard. I just kind of hit my mic by mistake. This one I don't have a theory on because I haven't really, like I said, I'm still learning on this case, so forgive me. But it's what's in the Bible that people wanted. And like I said, she helped me out on this, saying, you know, she's not sure about the Bible either. And she said she thinks that Tony Roden wanted it just because it was a family Bible, which is very true. My father, he passed away when I was 15, and he had a Bible that was given to him in, like, the 70s, and I have it, so I can understand that by wanting that. Why do we hear from the Manleys and the HG family, which I'm guessing that's Hannah Gilly's family, but nothing from most of the Rodens. You know, like I said, I'm not sure on that either, but she said there are a few Rodens in the groups, and, you know, yeah, they don't hear from them, and they barely hear from the Manleys any longer. So, you know, that's that there. And this one, like I said, I'm not sure on either. It was the key, what prompted Bobby to be alarmed enough to use the key. Like I said, I have no theory on that. But it seems, you know, from what she said, was that Bobby Joe said the dogs were not usually outside and the door was not usually locked. If she did actually feed the dogs, maybe their dog food was in the house, or maybe she had to get a key from the house to get into the other places she needed to be on the property, take care of, you know, the crops and all that. Maybe she was just going to let the dogs back in. Very possible. You know, those are very good, you know, theories on that. Number 16 is, why move the homes and move them across the county and keep them under lock and key for 2 years? There could be a lot of reasons, you know. They'll probably, you know, the most one is basically to try to secure the evidence and all that. And you do see it. You don't really see it, which a mobile, you know, a trailer, it's, you know, it's mobile. So I can understand, you know, it's like a car. They can move it. So I can understand that. You know, she was talking about just take stuff out of them, money and walls, etc., to keep lurkers from going in them, to keep someone from burning them. You know, that's a very possibility. Like Ed Gein, well, like I said, some label him a serial killer, some don't, but he's the one that inspired Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all that. I've recorded about him in earlier episodes. Like, after he got arrested and stuff, people burned his house down. Because I'm sure, you know, with a lot of the true crime people out there and just the journalists, all that reporters, like, they probably would have been going to that house a lot and trespassing and getting in the property and all that, and probably somebody would have burned it just to be doing it. Okay, number 17 is, how do they not hear the shots and try to get out? I've heard that possibly a silencer was used, but I don't really see that, because silencers, you know, are not really quiet either. Like, you would still think they could still hear that. And, you know, if not, then what if they did try to escape but was ambushed by the other, you know, people that was involved in the killings, if there was other people, you know? But if somebody's got a gun, you know, they might have just been quiet, you know, just one person could have done this. But like I said, if there were other people, you know, they could have got ambushed by them. And I mentioned earlier about what if each home had a killer or two waiting for a signal to take charge, so there was no way to escape. And she was talking about, she was wondering if DR, HR, and CR Jr., any of them were choked or suffocated in their rooms before the final one was killed. That'd be a quiet way to kill someone without waking the others, then shoot them afterwards before they left. Maybe there were three or more at DR and nobody had a chance to try to get out. And it was said that CR Jr. was trying to hide. Possibly he was. Could HR and CR Jr. have already been dead when DR got home? That, you know, that's, that makes things interesting, you know, if people's already, because I know they said that she got home pretty late. And she also said maybe someone had silencers. I'm not sure how good you can hear one in another room in a house if you slept hard. FR and HG were shot in such close quarters and within seconds, maybe, so there'd be no way to try to escape in that case. Like I said, very possibility. I'm going to throw this weird theory out there. I know he's been talked about. And I really, like I said, there's, like I said earlier, there's holes in any theory. Like, I kind of wonder if Kenneth, not nothing against the guy, what if he done the murders and then committed suicide? You know, but no gun was found at his body. I'm sure this theory, like I said, it has a lot of holes in it. But what if Kenneth did murder the family for some oddball reason? You know, motive, could it be money? You know, something like that. But what if he did commit suicide, but somebody found him? Because from my understanding, let me look in my notes, that he wasn't checked on and found until 1:30 in the afternoon. Like, that's just what's kind of makes me wonder. It's like, if he wasn't checked till 1:30, like, you know, he was roughly, they said, 3 miles away from the others. Like, if my family got shot, and I would try to check on everybody that was in the area to make sure they were okay. Excuse me. But like I said, what if somebody found him before 1:30 and didn't want him to be labeled a murderer? So, you know, maybe they got the gun and hid it or threw it away or something. Like I said, I'd still find it odd that he wasn't checked until 1:30. Unless he was, and I've just overlooked it. But everything I've seen, nobody checked on him until 1:30. And it was reported he had change threw around him. I've heard it was dollar bills as well, but, you know, if it was just change, you know, it could have been somebody going through his pocket or something like that. But I kind of wondered, like, what if, you know, was he going through the pockets to look for money? Or wondered if, what if he had a note in his pocket that said, hey, these are the people that killed. I know there was one theory, if I remember correctly, they said that maybe Kenneth was involved and the other person that was involved shot him so he wouldn't rat him out. You know, it's all very possibility. I kind of have, sorry if you hear my notebook, but flipping through some of my notes I've taken. Okay, so you're looking at, there was five victims that were, you know, boys, men. They were shot a total of 20 times. You know, there's three girls and 13 shots total. So it's kind of weird, like Chris Sr. shot 9 times, you know, Gary shot 3, you know, Chris Jr. shot 4, Frankie shot 3 times, and Kenneth shot 1. Like, that's, you know, and some of these are very gruesome, you know, like with Chris, you know, he had, like the defensive wounds he suffered was to his right forearm, one bullet went through a door before hitting him, shot in torso and a cheek. And then Gary, you know, was shot twice in the head, once in the face. One, you know, left a muzzle stain on the side of his head. And about Dana being shot 4 times on the right side of the head, one under her chin. Like, that is very personal, you know. That's, I don't understand, which I know they said, like, I think Chris Jr., like, that's why with him hiding, like, they shot him above, like, why do that to a 16-year-old boy? Like, the only thing I could see is just leave no witnesses, but it's still crazy. You know, there's talk, I've read somewhere about maybe three shooters, or at least three shooters that, you know, split up, which that's what I was talking about earlier, split up and go to each house and take it under control at the same time. Like, that is very, very possibility. And like I said, it still seems to go back to maybe child custody. But that's a lot, you know, that's a lot of stuff to do, you know, just to get custody over a child, you know, killing a whole, you know, family pretty much. That's, I don't know. I read too that some of the people in the Roden family and other people, like friends of the family, like I said, I read that Kendra Roden, the daughter of Kenneth, was supposed to stay with Hannah, and her boyfriend followed Hannah to her house, and on the way, her boyfriend got a toothache, and she went home, and they said he has no teeth. He has dentures. So that's kind of, I found odd. Then it said Miranda Gilley supposed to stay, but didn't for unknown reasons. A cousin of Kenneth, Donald Stone, was supposed to stay with Kenneth to go to a car auction, and he stayed home. And then Brandon Roden, who lived next door to one of the crime scenes, he didn't stay at his home. Like, if these are all true, that's kind of, it makes it seem like these people were expecting it or something, or it could have just been a coincidence. You know, they seem to be planned executions, but if they weren't, like what the lady said that I talked to for this episode, like, what if they killed them and then just shot them afterwards after they're already dead? You know, it's a very possibility, but, you know, it's weird because they had to know about the cameras on the property being destroyed. You know, they took them and destroyed them, or at least took them. And I listened to the Nancy Grace podcast. You know, I took some notes, you know, about it being 2 to 6 a.m., about the doors, you know, where the doors locked and all that. And I'm guessing Bobby Joe did feed the animals every morning. You know, hatred towards the family. And they were saying about a mass murder, basically, to make it look like the cartel done it. You know, try to throw everybody off on who done it. I listened to the No Witnesses, the podcast, the True Crime Cast or whatever, about it. Like, they mentioned about a July 21st bust. I can't really read my handwriting. That maybe sniff? Snitched on July 21st. So I can't remember where that goes with. And then they talk about the Kent County, Kentucky killings, and they were talking about a connection with that. And they were kind of thinking, though, about Jake Wagner, saying that Jake Wagner knew the killers and explains why that family moved like they did. You know, that's very possible as well. And I was reading up on Jake a little bit. Yeah, I don't know the guy personally. But it was said that he was abusive physically and verbally to Hannah. And somebody caused an accident, broke her ankle. And, they said that he was controlling and that he was, you know, basically 18, 19 years old when he started dating Hannah. And she was, you know, below 15. She was, you know, around 13, 14 years old, because I know the child they said was born around 16, because I was reading this on some of the group's messages. So like I said, it's still, like I said, this a little bit I've read on it, like, you know, I'm still learning and stuff, you know, this is part, six that I've done, and it's all confusing, because like I said, there's so many holes in every story. It seems like has there one story been perfect so you can trace it back like perfectly and everything connects? Like, is there one story that goes with this case? Like, hopefully one day justice will be found for this family, and you know, the killer or killers will be put to justice. So the only thing you can do, like I said, keep everybody that's in these groups and stuff, and this goes for anybody that, you know, that tries to research cases like this. You know, I do it and everything. Sorry, excuse me. But keep talking about them until they're solved. I don't care if the case is 50 years old. Keep talking about it. Keep it out in the public. Cause that's the best thing you can do. You know, even if nothing comes out of your theories and thoughts, as long as you're keeping it out there, you know, somebody hopefully will eventually talk that knows something. You know, so keep doing that. Keep posting the groups. Keep sharing your thoughts. Keep people talking about the case. You know, that, like I said, that goes for anybody. Anybody, you know, anybody's case, you know, just keep talking about it. You know, that's my advice to anybody. Because, you know, that helps, you know, keep it up there. And like I said, it keeps people talking. And hopefully the stories and stuff don't. Because say that something happened 20 years ago and people quit talking about it. You know, your stories will change. People's stories changes after time. If you try to keep the stories, you know, make notes of it, write it down so you have future reference of it in case something's brought up again. Just like I said, just keep the case until it's solved. Just keep talking about it. Even if it don't seem like nothing's coming out of it, say this case ain't solved for 10 years, still bring it up. Bring it up to whoever you can, you know, so people will not forget it and get this family, you know, this family and anybody, any victim to something like this, you know, somebody loses their life and their killer's not found. You know, as long as you keep talking about them, you know, they won't be forgotten. Because, you know, I couldn't imagine, you know, like this family. They did not deserve this no matter what they done. They did not deserve this. And like I said, nobody deserves to die. And a lot of people, when they die, you know, they're forgotten. You know, it's sad to think that. So like I said, that's like when you lose a loved one, you know, you keep their memories in your heart and in your mind. And it works, you know. But like my personal experience where I lost my dad and stuff at a young age, like, you know, I still think about him every day, but where it's been so long, like I don't remember his voice and there's other things I don't remember about him. You know, that scares me. So like I said, that's my advice to you. I know I've kind of repeated myself in all this section here, but like I said, just any case that you work on, just keep talking about the victim. And even if you live, you know, 100 years old and the case is never solved, you know, you still never forgot that victim. But thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next one.